The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome, everybody. Kip Kiefer with you on another edition of Need to Know. Glad to be with you as we start a brand new week in the month of March. Kind of amazing. We are a couple of weeks into the third month of the year. The wintertime period flying by and baseball starting in a couple of weeks. The Masters, of course, the first week of April. Lots of great time of year. The NCAA tournament. This is the play-in weekend and championship rounds of conference play. The champions of all those conferences and a bunch of at-large teams will comprise the field that will be announced this coming Sunday afternoon, preceding the beginning of the biggest and most raucous, probably sporting event over a period of time. The Super Bowl and some others could be argued could be just as big. But the NCAA tournament with the first two round games on Thursday and Friday, March 17th and 18th, I believe, maybe 18 and 19, but it is a week removed. And those are always some of the most compelling sports programming of the entire year. As you watch the smaller conference teams, the Davids, if you will, with their slingshot, trying to slay the Goliaths of the college basketball industry. And I think the gap has gotten a little bit closer together, because just seems like some of the smaller schools, smaller conferences have some outstanding players. And every year you see a couple of big giants go down in those first two rounds. It's always compelling. It's always so much fun. Everybody fills out a bracket, and we'll be filling out our brackets this week on the starting lineup coming up. So we'll be talking about the brackets. We won't have them yet because we air Saturday. And of course, the show is on Sunday. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll look forward to that, and just give you a heads up that a great time of year is ahead. I was searching for some alternate subjects tonight. I don't want to just harp on politics and the just dysfunctionality of our country right now, but it's just such a major, critically important subject that it really needs to be talked about. So we'll get to that in just a moment. I was traveling all this past week. I went to a couple of very different locations, Columbus, Ohio, for a convention for a couple of days early last week, and then flew down through Atlanta and went on to Savannah, Georgia, which is like a city lost in time. Got in the Uber to transport to the hotel, and the person said, "You come to Savannah often?" I said, "Well, I've been here one time. It was in 1983. That was 41 years ago. I was just barely out of high school. Went down with a couple of guys on St. Patrick's Day, which is the big, big week. It comes up, of course, this year on March 17th. And it was quite a time, but it's been a long time since I've been to Savannah. So I said, "It's been 41 years since I've been here." And he goes, "Well, don't worry. It hasn't changed at all. It's deep South. It is slow moving. It is not a place that a lot of hurry up and wait happens. It's very traditional. The buildings are old South. The trees and just the surrounding. Savannah is a very interesting place. Lots to do there. And something that I did do that you probably would not have expected was we're big fans. I think we've talked about it here on the show, my son and I, of the Las Vegas Golden Knights. He was working in Vegas when they were born. The tragic Las Vegas shooting, which killed 54 people, the shooter from Mandalay Bay shooting at a country concert across the street, wiped out so many people just 3 days before the Golden Knights played their first ever NHL game at the T-Mobile Arena right off the strip, not 2 miles from where the shootings took place. And that very first game for the Golden Knights was such an emotional, healing situation for Las Vegas. All of the first responders and other just regular civilian heroes who performed incredible acts of bravery and courage in saving other people and getting them to safety were honored that night. And it was a night that nobody in Las Vegas will ever forget. And the Golden Knights were pretty fired up to celebrate their ascension to the NHL team as they came out and scored 4 goals in the first 9 minutes against the Phoenix Coyotes and just overwhelmed them. The Golden Knights went on to a resounding win. And again, it's a night that is always going to be in the memories of every resident of Las Vegas, their first professional franchise. And of course, after just 6 years, they won the Stanley Cup last year. But anyway, in Savannah, their lowest level minor league team, the Savannah Ghost Pirates, which sounded pretty compelling. We were on hand in their cool little 6,000-seat arena. They played the South Carolina Stingrays in an East Coast Hockey League game, and it was rock'em sock'em, back and forth. Unfortunately, the Ghost Pirates trailed in that game 3-0 with just 12 minutes left, and the crowd was getting pretty surly as much as they were really supporting their team. And, you know, it's so funny. There's so many little southern cities that have embraced hockey of all things. And I mean, from Louisiana franchises up through South Carolina, down in Florida, in Fort Myers, there's the Florida Everblades, which I think is a really cool name. But anyway, the Ghost Pirates score with about 12 minutes left to make it 3-1. And then incredibly scored again on a power play with about 8 minutes left in the game, then scored again with 3 minutes left in the game to tie it. And it went just, it was for sure looking like it was going to go to overtime. The Golden, not the Golden Knights, that's the parent team. The Ghost Pirates made one last rush into the offensive zone, got a couple of shots, and stuffed in a rebound with 0.7 seconds left in the game. I've been watching hockey for 40 years. I don't think I've ever seen a goal with less than 3 or 4 seconds left, let alone less than 1 second left, to be a game winner. So that was really extraordinary. And of course, a good time was had by all. So that was a fun experience. We also went for the unique merchandising opportunity. The Ghost Pirates merch is pretty cool. And we picked up some shirts and hats and things and had a big time. So we were in Savannah. And it was just a great time. Now back in Alabama, getting organized here. And let me talk about what happened last Thursday night. I was actually in Savannah watching this. But every year, the President of the United States is invited by the Speaker of the House of Representatives to come and give a report to the, I guess we can call them the board of directors. That would be Congress and Senate. The Supreme Court justices are present, seated on the front row. It's a night that is traditional in America. It is a night where the president comes and gives a report to the board of directors and to all the shareholders in this country. And that's you, me, and everybody else who pays taxes to support this government. And Joe Biden came to deliver the State of the Union address, but it was better called in this particular case the State of the Disunion, because there was nothing unifying, nothing that brought people together whatsoever in this speech, because from minute one, it's almost as if somebody handed him the wrong script and gave him his acceptance speech for the Democrat nomination at their national convention later this year in Chicago. It was the most partisan, foul-mouthed, worst-toned State of the Union in history. It was totally partisan. It started off on the premise of attacking anybody who was, he didn't use the word stupid, but that's what he was intimating, stupid enough to believe that this administration has not been a resounding success. Your eyes, your ears, your pocketbook, your relationship with the people around you are not indicators. Don't depend on your own sensibility for how the things are right now, because our president told us everything is wonderful. The economy is booming. The country has this bright future. Everything is just glorious. But again, look in your wallet and look in your bank account and look at your grocery store receipt and look at how much it costs to fill up your tank. Prices in the Biden administration are up 18.5% overall where they were when he took office 3.5 years ago. That's bad enough. Also, interest rates are extremely high, where they were very, very low when Trump left office in 2020. Now to buy a house or property or even a car, it's so exorbitantly expensive that most Americans can't even think about doing such a thing, particularly young Americans who want to buy their first house. Maybe they've just gotten married and want to start their lives together, get their organization on putting a family together. But they're really not in position to buy a house now, because while inflation has skyrocketed, wages have been very flat. And Biden will immediately start to talking about how he's created 15 million new jobs during his administration. Well, the Pinocchios from the Washington Post were pretty long there, because they do fact checks and rate president statements. 15 million new jobs is based on the fact that about half the workforce was still out of commission in the November 2020 election and into 2021. And a lot of those jobs went away, manufacturing jobs, a small business especially. There were still tons of schools that were closed. It was still in the early months of the Biden administration. I would say half the workforce was at home, because the government, and he immediately followed suit, sending out checks to people to stay home and stay off out of public areas, and except for, of course, protesters who were allowed to roam freely and do whatever they wanted, burn down buildings and terrorize people. It was a situation where saying that he's created 15 million jobs, maybe that many people have gone back to work, but there were at least that many dry docked. And now, if you look a couple lines deeper in the report, even with his alleged 15 million new jobs he's created, there are still about something in the neighborhood of 10 or 11 million people that have never gone back to work, that are still unemployed or unaccounted for or whatever. The labor force is nowhere near what it was in 2019 before the COVID era. So that's a false claim. This president has proven, and again, if you're just hearing me for the first time, no one on earth has more respect for the office of president of the United States than I do. I'm an American history fanatic. I read everything. I watch every documentary. I absolutely eat, drink, and sleep American history. And as a kid, we had the Compton's encyclopedias. And one of my favorite things to do when I was sitting around, looking for something to do, is just grab at random an encyclopedia. And by the time I was 9 or 10 years old, I knew every president that had ever served, and most of them pretty much in order. And I would, let's say, for example, just reach in and pull the C edition of the Compton Encyclopedia. Well, I'd immediately say C. Okay, that Grover Cleveland, Calvin Coolidge, Jimmy Carter. Of course, Jimmy came a little after that 9 or 10 year old time. But anyway, the bottom line is that I would turn and read from the beginning of the article and look at the pictures and look at the timelines of their administrations. I was just all over learning everything I could learn about how a guy rises up from whatever circumstances they come from and becomes president of the United States. It's something that always fascinated me. And so when I preface this statement, because Joe Biden, folks, is absolutely the biggest liar the most corrupt guy that's ever served in the White House. He is a career politician. He has the audacity to go out there in the State of the Union address. And I don't know what they had him hyped up on, but if you watch him day to day, he mumbles, he stumbles, he's half awake half the time. He was on fire. He came out just completely full of it. In front of the House and the Senate and the Supreme Court justices, he right away threw them under the bus, despite the fact they're sitting right in front of him, showing no respect whatsoever for those justices who have reached the highest honor in their profession, immediately trashing the Roe versus Wade case reversal. And again, I stressed this a couple of years ago, but everybody needs to know, once again, the U.S. Supreme Court did not overturn Roe versus Wade. It was not a case where someone sued and the case got all the way to the Supreme Court of the legality of Roe versus Wade. It was a case in Mississippi about abortion, and there was a dispute, and one side, the plaintiff's side, alleged that the Supreme Court decision of 1971 in Roe versus Wade, which ironically was based on another person from Texas in a dispute. But the Supreme Court never ruled that it was a legal situation. They just ruled that there's nothing in the Constitution that would preclude abortion. And the Supreme Court was faced with this Mississippi case of determining if the defense of the allegation of the plaintiff was they had a right under any circumstances for abortion due to the Supreme Court action. And the court ruled in favor of the state of Mississippi in that case. And the reason they did was because they could find no legality constitutionally that would permit abortion. So what they basically did, they didn't outlaw it. Now you're hearing leftist commentators saying, well, when the Supreme Court made the audacious decision to overturn Roe versus Wade, Roe versus Wade was a victim in terms of its status by by that case. But by bringing that case to the Supreme Court, it did turn everything upside down, but it didn't abolish abortion. It just said there's no federal law now, and there never was an official federal law. The court basically said, we're not going to prevent you from doing it because there's no language that says you can't. This court said, well, there's no language that says you can, so you can't use a federal guideline as the arbiter of this case. So bottom line is it got returned to each state, and each state is now is empowered to determine their own individual abortion policies. And it's so far, of course, fallen pretty much on party lines. States with that would be considered red or predominantly Republican have tended to not permit it, Ohio being the exception. Ohio's been voting Republican straight through. But the blue states, of course, have even passed more liberal guidelines than were in place before. The bottom line, it's back where it should be, in the hands of the states. The federal government was never intended to be what this group right now, this administration, all these bureaus, departments, agencies, all the regulations, all the taxation, all the things they're doing. That was never intended to be the role of the federal government. The federal government was basically conceived, and this is ironic, to protect the territorial integrity of the borders of the country. Well, that's not exactly a resounding success by Joe Biden success. People say, well, you know, his border policy obviously is a failure. He doesn't have a border policy. His border policy is bring him in. Come on down. He should be Bob Barker in the White House. Come on down. The border's wide open. Come on in. We're going to even hook you up in sanctuary cities, fly you all over the country for free, give you cell phones, give you $10,000 loaded debit cards. And lower income Americans are saying, well, wait a minute. What is going on here? We're handing out all this stuff to these people that have just crashed our borders and don't even belong here, not to mention the heinous crimes and things. How about Joe Biden getting Lake and Riley's name wrong, the victim of murder in Athens, Georgia, a couple weeks ago at the hands of a Venezuelan illegal, and Biden used the word illegal and is getting all kinds of, you know, what for it. But although he never really has said anything conciliatory about Lake and Riley's brutal murder, but he's apologizing now for calling the guy who did it an illegal instead of an undocumented citizen. I know what he needs to be called, a dirty, filthy murderer, and he should face the ultimate penalty. But anyway, that's just a sidebar. But protecting the integrity of the borders and also, providing a federal government structure that is based on three branches of government. We're going to get back to basic civics here, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial, and all three of those work in concert with one another to be a check and balance. The founders, though, tried everything they could think of to try and keep this nightmare scenario that we have now, where one party has been in power long enough and has controlled Congress enough and the White House, where they have been able to put a lot of pieces in place where people that are not even elected, these bureaus and agencies who write all these restrictive regulations and inhibit business and cost Americans so much of their opportunity to succeed. Gas prices is a great example. Biden, of course, immediately shut off the pipelines, took away all of the production of oil in the United States. And by those actions, drove up prices considerably and took away, at the end of the Trump administration, America was becoming a huge exporter, completely energy independent for the first time. But under the guise of this absurd climate change myth, which is just another vehicle to use to get control of the government and to shake people up with all these dire, you know, declarations of the biggest threat to people on Earth is the existential crisis of climate change. Well, I say it all the time. This planet's been here for 4.5 billion years. If there's climate change, it is triggered by the planet. The planet evolves. The planet survives. The planet does what it needs to do. The blip on the radar that our existence here is not going to be a determining factor as to whether the planet goes on and thrives. If anybody tries to sell you that bunch of hooey, don't listen to their pitch for swampland in Florida that follows that up. So, you know, the basic function of the federal government is not to be involved directly in all of our lives like they have done under this group. But these people are operating under a completely different premise that you don't have the capability, the intelligence, the instincts, the judgment, or the personal control to make your own decisions, to have personal liberty, to have individual freedoms, to have free speech, right to bear arms, etc., etc. You need to be censored. Anybody who they don't like what they say can be canceled and humiliated. It's really the first pages right out of the Marxist playbook. I think the originator Lenin, the creator of the original Soviet state, would have been very pleased that the Communist Manifesto is being used here, and his successor, Joseph Stalin, who took it to a brand new level during his reign of terror as head of the USSR before it collapsed under Gorbachev. So anyway, that's the playbook they're running. So for Biden to stand up and yell at American citizens and immediately criticize 50% of us or more, according to current polls, more like 60 or 65% of us, for questioning him, his fitness to serve, his accomplishments. And I don't really blame Joe completely for what he says, because he is in a cocoon of surrounded by a bunch of yes men, Obama disciples, his lovely wife, Dr. Jill Biden, who has the intelligence of a coconut, but they're all telling him what a fantastic job he's doing and that everything is going great. The economy's amazing. Americans are thriving, which is not the case. So he stands up and reports that, but I think he's just parroting what he's being told because he's just a front man. He's just a puppet. He's not making any decisions. He is being manipulated and told a lot of things that aren't even true. And he is not the guy that that you think he is. And how he can stand up there for an hour and a half and just rant and rave. This, once again, the State of the Union. This is a report to you and me on how our country is. And he spent most of it criticizing not only the man he's probably going to have to face in November in a rematch, Donald Trump. Of course, he buried him, calling him my predecessor over and over and over, of what a terrible threat he is to democracy. And isn't that funny when they have all these, pardon the pun, trumped up charges rolling right now through various courts around the country, and we can break them down. Maybe we'll do that next week. But the cases being brought against Trump are just contrived and in some cases just downright ridiculous. And they've also been coordinated. There are two state cases in New York and Georgia that have been directly coordinated through contact with the White House. It's come out in the Fulton County, Atlanta case that Fannie Willis and later her lover boy, Nathan Wade, made a trip to the White House and spent an entire day. She with Kamala Harris, he with the entire legal staff at the White House. He even billed Fulton County for a 24-hour workday. So, boy, Nathan, you went midnight to midnight. That's pretty impressive. I don't think he probably actually worked that many hours. But the bottom line is the Georgia case is the most interesting because they brought a RICO charge, which is a federal racketeering statute, which alleges that multi-states, numerous people have to engage in a conspiracy to be an organized crime type of syndicate. And the RICO Act was, again, created to go after the families that were controlling organized crime in this country. To charge a former president with a racketeering charge because he questioned the election results, that is a weak sauce case. It's ridiculous. It's being tried by a Fulton County prosecutor and her special prosecutor, who just turned out to be her boyfriend. They lied their ass off in their hearing recently. There's all kinds of evidence that they were together several years before this all came up. And she picked Nathan Wade to prosecute a RICO racketeering case, despite the fact that his background is in family law, which basically are custody disputes and divorce, and of course, personal injury. So you've got a divorce court lawyer who chases ambulances on the side, trying a federal racketeering court case. And it's a racketeering case that emanates out of Fulton County, Georgia. It absolutely makes no sense. It's ridiculous. And that's enough to touch on one of the absurd cases. We talked about last week, the documents case in Miami, where Trump was stubborn about turning over documents because that's just who Trump is. He has, as a former president, knows that he has every right to possess documents. And yet when they demanded to have some of them back, he really kind of shut them down. And if he just cooperated, I don't know why he took the stand he did, but that's just Donald Trump. I don't make excuses for him. I'm not a Trump lover. I do like what he did in his first 3 years in office. Everything was in a lot better shape. The economy was better. Everybody, the unemployment was next to nothing, and he had the situation on foreign shores in the best shape we've had in a number of years, until this guy comes in and on the first day, the first 3 days, has 90 some odd executive orders to basically take away everything Trump had built during his administration that was working really well, particularly at the border. I also liked in the State of the Disunion by Joe Biden, him ranting and raving, it's about time that individuals and corporations start paying their fair share. It's ridiculous. These people are getting away with murder. They're not having to pay hardly any tax, and they're making millions and billions of dollars. Well, isn't it funny that his own son, Hunter Biden, who's been running the family business, which they don't have a product or a service, the family business is Joe Biden himself, influence Joe Biden getting involved, Joe Biden at the time a vice president. Even before that, his brother was marketing him when he was a senator for foreign adversaries, China, Iran, Russia, Ukraine, all of these countries, Kazakhstan, a lot of Romania, a lot of countries that are not exactly our big pals. We're kicking in millions of dollars to the Biden family. How much taxes do you suppose the Bidens paid on all that illicit money that the Senate, the House committee has the evidence of the bank records. It has the transfers. It has all of the shell company accounts set up at 20 some odd banks around the country. And what about Hunter himself? Hunter Biden, did not even file taxes for the years that he was on the board at Burisma, the big oil company, energy company in Ukraine. Now, why was he on the board? Gosh, I don't know. He even said in an interview on ABC, well, it might have been because my last name was Biden, but he did not. He was making over $1 million a year to attend an occasional board meeting and stay in a 5-star hotel. And he did not file tax returns in those years. And now the statute, and he was charged way back when, person being investigated. Well, they just kind of slow walked that and let those charges pass because it's a 7-year statute of limitations. And that was 2015 and 2016. So as soon as 2018 rolled around and nothing had happened, I'm sorry, 2016, he's off the hook for those years, but now he has been officially charged with not paying his taxes or dramatically underreporting income. That case is being brought by the Biden administration Justice Department because they have an independent counselor who tried to finagle the sweetheart deal that would have made all that go away, but got called out by the judge and now to save face has gone ahead and charged Hunter Biden on a gun violation. He was not allowed to buy a gun as a drug addict. And all these tax charges, like 3 or 4 years totaling tax evasion of almost $2 million that he was supposed to pay to the government. So you got Joe Biden up there railing at Americans and corporate people and people that have done very well that they have to pay their fair share when he and his son and his brother have been raking in millions of dollars over the last 30 years and not paying a dime. And this is something you may not realize. Even if it's a criminal enterprise that is making your money, the IRS, says, well, we don't care how you make your money, but whatever money you make, you've got to report and you've got to pay tax on it. I learned this a long time ago. My dad at one time dabbled in the, let's just call it the sports brokering business, where he had some regular customers who would call up and he would take their action. And he showed me once in the tax booklet, because I think he had one or two decent years, but he showed me in the tax booklet, there was a code for bookmaking in the back of the IRS form. So, and then if you look through there, you'll see other ones like embezzlement. If you steal a bunch of money from your company, you're still responsible for reporting that because they want their cut. And the federal government could care less if you're committing crimes as long as you're giving them a share of it. Any kind of charges on those crimes is usually a local situation. So, the audacity for him to stand up and rant and rave at corporations and millionaires that they're not paying their fair share when they basically pay over 90% of the total tax bill every year. It just goes to show you once again the America that these people envision. And it's not the America that you and I grew up in, and it's not the America that our forefathers tried to create, where everybody has the right for the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. So anyway, that speech, again, supposed to be the State of the Union, supposed to be a unifying situation where our president comes out and tells us where our country is and his vision for where it's going. It was a hour and 7 minute rant and rave political hack job. It was not a State of the Union. It was a campaign speech, and it was the worst kind of campaign speech. This is a guy who ran in 2020 on a platform where he was going to unite America. The adults are going to be back in the room. All the chaos from the Trump administration. Well, there wasn't the chaos of 10 or 12 million people pouring into the country and bankrupting our cities and threatening our infrastructure like it's never been threatened before. Most of these current guys that are pouring in the country are from some of our most adversarial states. They're young military age 20-somethings. What are they doing here? You don't just get to leave China and come to America and crash the border. You know, again, Christopher Wray, the FBI director today, was in a hearing saying, you know, we've got to really be on our guard now because we got a lot of people in this country that are some bad eggs and are plotting, you know, some kind of terrible crime against humanity of Americans. And, you know, it's just ironic. This guy sits on his hands as FBI director in the Biden administration. And now he's telling us, well, you know, all of you better cover your ass because you're in big danger right now because of what's happened on the border. Well, he's partially responsible for that. He's part of this administration. I don't understand how they just, you know, throw up their hands like it's not their fault when this is not an accident, folks. These people are inviting all of these people from 170 countries and counting now to just pour in here. And again, the idea is to completely overturn what we've all become used to: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, a government of the people, by the people, for the people. So the State of the Disunion address, just another example of Joe Biden and his complete unfitness for the job from a from every situation. I don't know still what they shot him up with or what they gave him to be animated, but it turned him into a nasty old man yelling, "Get off my lawn. If you're not going to support my policies, I don't even want you. You're disloyal and you're not an American." And, you know, it was really a sad state of affairs. And I shudder for the future of my children and my grandchild. I hope that a lunacy warrant can be issued to all the mass of people that are espousing this new direction of us becoming the socialist states of America instead of the United States of America. Because right now, folks, we are sure as hell not united. That's Need to Know for this week. Kip Kiefer, Tony Curry will be back coming up this week with another edition of Kiefer and Curry. You never know what we're going to talk about. And don't forget, as I mentioned earlier, ABC 3340, the starting lineup. We'll start talking about March Madness and hoops this week and have a great show next week with you as we talk about the NCAA tournament and the opening of baseball. I've been a baseball guy my whole life. Can't wait to see the 2024 edition of the Atlanta Braves and all the other teams. Thanks for tuning in. Have a fantastic week, everybody. I'm Kip Kiefer on the TKR Network.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.